So Narada Bhakti Sutras. The highest teaching is always given first. To explain the first sutra, there will be many more sutras. And there is a total of 84 in the Narada Bhakti Sutras. We see that with any Upanishad, we see that also with the Gita. So, the student,
sutra you said, I just didn't catch it.
84. The first sutra that we saw yesterday, where Narada says, in plural, Vyakhya Syamaha, we will explain. Okay, we as in standing for the entire tradition. But the tradition does not exist in isolation. The tradition exists because of the Veda. The tradition exists because of our Shraddha in this means of knowledge that tells us something we don't know about ourselves. And the tradition exists because it is a support to our growth. Because how much can we grow, really speaking? When we look at it from the standpoint of the mind and the body, of course we can grow to the up to the known example of the 500 kg lady who is waiting to come to India to have her bariatric surgery. In terms of the mind, how much can we grow? Because there is a lot in the whole area of self-help. And so we can dabble in a lot of methods, we can dabble with a lot of techniques. All of that is for a certain emotional maturity which allows us to say that I can handle anything. That's really what we are looking at. Not the brute, oh, I can handle anything, throw anything at me kind of stuff. But whatever comes is okay, I can handle it because I am gifted. So we saw yesterday the shaktis that we are all endowed with. And there is no kanjusi. You know, Bhagwan has not done any kanjusi in giving these shaktis to us. It is ours to claim. So, when Narada says, we will talk about bhakti, he talks about the highest form of bhakti. And he defines it. And he says, Satu asmin Parama Prema Rupa. And because it is a sutra, it needs to be unlocked. Sa Bhakti, you know, it's a pronoun for Bhakti, feminine word. And what is very interesting is the word Asmin. See, for the bhakta, we were looking at the bhaktas, the four types of bhaktas yesterday. So the aarti, the one who remembers Bhagwan only in distress, Artharthi who wants a lot of things and of course asks Bhagwan. The Jignyasa who wants to know is not satisfied with what he or she is getting. And the Jnani who is one with Bhagwan. So with all the three of them, not except for the Jnani, for the Arthi, for the Artharthi, and for the Jignyasu, the one who wants to know, Bhagavan is Tat Shabda. Tat is a pronoun. Okay? Tat, so when we say it's a pronoun, it means it stands for a noun. And so that's the beauty of any language. So I don't have to say, Rama went to the forest, Rama lived with Sita, Rama did this in the forest. I use the word, I use a pronoun, he. Likewise, for the bhakta, for the devotee, Bhagwan is remote. Because when do we use the word that? So I will say that tree. I won't say that mic. It's like too close for comfort. So I will say this mic. So that tree that I see in a distance. Or that mountain. Or that structure. Anything that is close to me. In any language, I will not use the word that. I will say this. So this could be the recorders because, you know, it is accessible. This could be the mic. This could also be the body. This is the mind. What is the closest this? Yeah. It is so close that there is no distance. Because what is the distance between me and me? Me and this. What is the distance? Even the body. What is my distance with the body? What is the distance? My body. Straightforward. I mean, what kind of a silly question is that? So I'm here, this body, there is no distance. What is the distance I experience with the mind? My mind. But still there is a strange distance. Because it is drishya. That the body can be changed. I can change my posture. I can change my position as I sit. The body doesn't change itself. Sometimes it feels like that in terms of the shape. But I can maneuver when I'm walking. If I want to change the pace, the speed, if the road is steep, then I make changes in the way the body functions. The body cannot do that by itself. The mind also, I can change. In fact, we say, oh, I hope you change your mind. Or I say, oh, I changed my mind. So how did that happen? It changed itself? No. So in the light of new information, I made some changes to how I was thinking about something, etc., etc. So while I say that there is no distance between me and the mind, no distance between me and the body, it is all drishyam. It is all seen. Drishyam means seen. So who is the one that is watching it? It's like CCTV ke liye advertisement. To upar wala dekh raha hai. Right now nobody is being watched. Huh? There is no CCTV. But who is the one who is watching stuff and then therefore being able to modify, etc., etc. So, there has to be something that watches it. And that, we are aware of it. I'm aware of changes in my body. I'm aware of changes in my mind. We call it Drik, the seer. So we come back to the Drik in some time. The Upanishads have done an absolutely brilliant job of analyzing our experience of prema, of love. So you say, oh really? I thought Upanishad will be like, you know, all exalted stuff for Brahman and all that. But it starts with our experience. And this definition, prema or love, is known to us. So what is the nature of that love that is known to us? So we find that when we are with a loved one, we are generally happy. So either it is the presence of that person, or sweet nothings the person whispers, or a caring action, we feel very much at home with that person. If the person compliments us or is generally appreciative, then I find that I am totally acceptable to that person. And poets and authors across centuries have written about love, have tried to decode what exactly is this emotion, considered an emotion, that everybody aspires for, everybody thinks there isn't enough of that in their life. And it's never ending, the aspiration. Because only when there is love, generally, most people experience happiness. So the Upanishads have looked at it in great depth. And this level of analysis you will not see anywhere in the world. So our experience of love, how is it? That in the presence of what we love, you know, so if I have put my home together with a lot of love, sourced different things from different places, then I find that I'm very happy in that place. Or I love to go outdoors, so when I am in the presence of nature, I am at peace. The constant drone of I want this, I want that, etc., etc., it seemingly dies down. Yesterday when Usha was sharing about, Usha Swaroop was sharing about Kailash Mansarovar, so she was sharing some of these things, that all that my family stands for, friends, is that when one is doing that parikrama, you're leaving everything behind. And just there is just awe. There is something that cannot be described. So in other words, the projecting mind, the reacting mind, that resolves. Temporarily. Because we're always struggling with wanting a connection. And so all mobile networks obviously will promise that you will, wherever you are always connected. And it is a universal need for us. The need to stay connected. The need to be connected. But when I'm aspiring for something, when I want something, let's say I'm missing, a lot of us here are not with our family members, biological family members. So maybe I am missing their presence. So I'm missing their presence because I feel deeply loved in their presence. Deeply loved, I feel very happy in their presence. So me, the one who is wanting the presence of this loved person, we use the word object other than me, and me the subject, there is a separation. It may be a physical separation, or it may be that I don't feel understood by them, and so therefore I feel that while I'm living in the same house, I don't feel connected. Whatever be the kind of separation I'm experiencing, the need to connect, the need to feel that the separation is no longer there is universal. And the need is universal because I have made a conclusion that I am indeed separate from the rest of the world. The conclusion that I am separate from the rest of the world is because I have taken this separation to be absolutely real. The sense of separation I have is because the whole, you know, our largest sense organ is the skin, sense of touch. And that is all across the body, covers the entire body. So it is a great blessing because we sense stuff, so we can protect ourselves from danger. Otherwise, you go shopping into the market, you may not come back with all your parts. You know, if we didn't have the sense of touch, sense of boundary, but it's purely a sense. But on the basis of the sense, the conclusion is that I am separate from the rest of the world, and therefore I seek connection. And the good news is that while this universal need exists, there are people also that help to fulfill the need for this love. Because we find, especially, you know, in teenage love or even in any romantic love especially, you feel you can conquer the entire world. You feel very empowered. That fellow might just be one kakdi, but still will think like, okay, I will do anything for this person. You know. So what is this sense of empowerment that this love happens to bestow on a person? In the presence of that person, the vision of that person for you, that you are completely acceptable as you are. Nothing much to change. As you are completely acceptable. That vision, when it becomes my vision, so right now I don't think I'm completely acceptable, but in the presence of that person, I feel I am completely acceptable. And even when the person is not there, I am completely acceptable, then that's wonderful. Because the transfer of vision has taken place. But generally, the transfer of vision does not take place. And so, I now become very dependent. I become very dependent on all the things that I love, all the people that I love. And there are certain conditions. Because when I am loved, I am happy. And I am happy meaning it is evoking the pleased self. So the person cooks something I really like. Or the person surprises me with a holiday. Or the person just spends time together, otherwise the person is very, very busy. Now this person is spending a lot of time. Suddenly you wonder, oh, is the job at risk? But anyway, you keep that aside. So lot of time is there. All the things that you consider are conducive conditions are there. So far so good. But sometimes those conditions are not met. So now the fights begin. Because earlier you used to do that, now you don't. So earlier, all the conditions that used to make me happy, that used to make me feel loved, now they have evaporated or they've gone out of the window or what, we don't know. We don't know what has happened. So what I thought was unconditional love, what I thought was, you know, from my side as well as the other person's side, whoever the other person is, it could be your partner, it could be your child, it could be a friend, whoever. Now that love becomes conditional. Only when X, Y, Z conditions are fulfilled, only then I'm okay. Then I'm happy. Only if you were to stop drinking, I would be happy. That's all I ask you. What else? I have not asked you to change much about yourself. Only if you stop looking at women the other way, then I think you'd be fine. But of course, I'm telling you all this for your good only. You know, people will think you're a womanizer, the way you talk, etc., etc. I don't want people to think like this about you. So, that love is now tainted. It is tainted with a lot of conditions we attach. And we are all very unique people. We have our set of unique conditions that we attach to it. Occasionally, certain moments, no conditions. When there are no conditions, either from my side or from that other person's side, then I feel at home. Then I feel, wow, this is great. So, the Upanishads say, especially Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that when you are in the presence of what you love, really speaking, what you love is really not what you love. What you love is yourself. Okay, now this is sounds like a big contradiction. So that means we are all very selfish people. So the husband is loved not for the sake of the husband. The husband is not loved for the sake of the husband. Because if, let's just say, husband makes me happy. But if husband makes me happy, then from where is this ananda coming? If ananda, because in the presence of husband, I'm very happy. So now he's a source of my happiness. Now husband is source of my happiness is my conclusion. So husband has to be around to for me to be happy all the time. Or if not, then his memory everywhere should be around. Digital, you know, those digital photo frames that they, it changes. Yeah, all that. And so much memorabilia, everything so nice. I am surrounded by his love. Now, if he is the source of ananda, ananda, I'm using it as a word for happiness, then it should be available to me at all times. But sometimes, after a few years, husband walks to the door. Earlier, my face would light up. Now, I'm so angry because he's not paid the bills. Did you pay the bill? You didn't pay the bill? I told you so many times. You waited till the last minute. So what happened to that ananda? So he was a source of ananda. If that ananda is intrinsic to him, It should be available all the time. If Ananda is intrinsic to him, it should be available to everyone. Correct? That anybody and everybody who sees him surely should be very happy, as happy as I am or as I was in his presence. But no, then it becomes exclusive. No, I don't want everybody to be as happy. This is, no way. So he is mine. So now love is, our experiences, prema. We're still talking about prema. We're not talking about parama prema. So this love that is of our experience, is it's conditional? And it seems to wax and wane. And even without this husband, I do experience Ananda in sleep and in samadhi. So, in the presence of other people I love, that time also I experience Ananda. So then the question is, where does it lie? Can Ananda really be intrinsic to this husband? Because as experience shows, the same person does not make you happy for the rest of your life. Your moods are there. The person may try, but your moods are very much there. So that Ananda is not available to everyone, the Ananda that I think the object has, that Ananda is not available to me 24/7, and Ananda is available to me in sleep and samadhi. That means Ananda cannot be the intrinsic feature of any object. I took husband as an example. It could be a painting, it could be an antique, it could be music, it could be lot of things. Any object, anything that is other than me. So Ananda cannot be an intrinsic feature of any person or any condition or any object. So then from where is this Ananda coming? Because it's not from anything external. Then maybe I have to look within. Look within means what? Look at your kidneys, look at your pancreas, look at what? So if we really were able to see, we'd probably get a heart attack. You say, oh no, this should not happen there because our need to control is so high. So So here is where the Upanishad tells us that what the husband is loved, or any object, is loved not for the sake of that object or person. It is because of what is evoked in the presence of that. It could be music, it could be person, it could be condition, it could be object. And the source of that Ananda is the Atma, is I. So any time and every time I experience Ananda, happiness, it is my own Ananda that is being manifest. Oh, but if that is the case, then why I don't feel it all the time? Because it is inhibited. It is inhibited by the conditions we place on ourselves. It is inhibited by our raga and dvesha. So because what I take to be me is really the conditions of the body and mind. So if my mind is okay, if my mind is peaceful, then maybe there is some ananda there. But that peaceful mind is just a vritti, it's just a thought. That is drishyam, it is seen, it's not me. Oh, I felt so nice after meditation. It's a vritti, it's a thought. So, all the vrittis, all the thoughts, they come and they go. Then are we saying this happiness is a vritti, is a thought? Is it a thought? Is a question. Because if it is subject to change, then I cannot depend on it. Because it changes so fast, my God, there's no way I can, I'll feel like I don't have any bearings, there's no anchor, this is all changing. So I try to hold on to a peaceful thought, and the more I try, doesn't work. So then, what are we really talking about? Wealth is loved, not for the sake of wealth, but because it evokes the pleased self. The wife is loved, not for the sake of the wife, but because it evokes the pleased self. So on and so forth. Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. So everything appears pleasing because I have lot of ragadvishas. So the color is so loud. So some people said, you Ashvavidya people, when in a gang of sannyasis, like especially Hindu Dharma Acharya Sabha, so you will get to see shades of this color. And somebody was saying, so loud the color. So the color is loud. And so I want something soft, it hurts the eye. So this is a particular raga dvesha. When I react, because we all have very specific likes and dislikes. So some of us will only have green tea. Some of us, we cannot have tea with so much sugar. Some of us don't have tea at all. We are very sattvika people. We only have milk. The vegans, of course, will frown on us. How can you have milk also? So this is too much. So from a cup of tea onwards, we have such strong likes and dislikes, which we also use the word craving and aversion. I crave for certain things. And all these things I crave for because I think it will make me happy, because it will evoke the pleased self in me. So of course now, it's no more a thing or an object. It is a condition that conditions my ananda. It is a condition that conditions even my love. So the love that I experience for somebody is now very, very conditional. You follow these conditions, but don't talk to me like this. So I get very hurt. Oh, when you talk to me like this, I feel very supported. So like that, there are all these conditions. And what we really love is ourselves. Because all these conditions are only helping us to evoke the pleased self. No, but you know what, this is all sounding very selfish and all that. So, all the seva people of the world, so much, they're so selfless. So bleeding hearts, they do so much for other people. So much seva, mind-boggling. Surely that's not for the sake of the self. That too is for the sake of the self. Because I cannot stand it that X and Y people are suffering. So I want to deal with it because there is a discrepancy now. I can't just have a regular meal knowing that so many people are suffering and they don't have food to eat. So I want to do something for them. Still, what I am doing is I want to do it so that I am happy. That condition is satisfied. And the more we know a person, we find that sometimes it's easy for us to love, but a lot of the times, the more you know, you also know the person's blemishes and vice versa. So how, I can't love a person unconditionally. So what to talk of parama prema for Bhagwan? Because bhakti is really the relationship with Bhagwan. So if I don't know how to have parama prema, I try very hard to unconditionally love, and then all the cards and the, you know, what we see in the media, what is glorified, you know, romantic love is glorified so much in the movies. So I try to mimic those conditions sometimes, or I try to be more loving, I try to be more kind, but I can't do love. It's like you can't do compassion. If there is love in my heart, if there is compassion in my heart, then I can be loving.
Somebody wants to come.
They can come.
Come. If there's a room. Yeah, there.
Please come. Come.
Yes, come. Just
yeah, so move the bags, yeah. Thanks.
No.
Can you just
share that?
Put it
down. Yeah. So if I find it difficult to love another person, then how to have parama prema rupa? It sounds too much. Anyway, I struggle with this, trying to be loving to another person. So I want to bite that person's head off. But now, I have more complex. After listening to Narada Bhakti Sutra, at least the beginning of it. So, parama prema rupa for Bhagwan, how? So, forget it. Before we have even really looked into verse number one, I don't think this is possible. This is too much. So, what tapas I have to do for this? So, I feel very disheartened now. What shall we do? But not to worry. Because it is a love of a jnani. And Bhagwan says, jnani tu atmaiva me matam. My vision, me matam, is what? That you are me. You are me meaning that there is no difference between the two of us. So this movie, nice line it has, Ek Jaan Hai Hum, very old movie and very glorified also. So I think they commit suicide or something.
No?
Ek Dooje Ke Liye. There is a song also, Ek Jaan Hai Hum, okay. So in the experience of love, you know, our experience of love, we don't experience separateness. We don't experience separation. We experience oneness. We experience it. Okay? I remember there was a camp in Rishikesh. And there was a couple there, you know, amongst the participants. And the husband, he had a sprain. So then he was helped to his room, and the other participants, they said, okay, let's find out whether there is a doctor, and the doctor was summoned, and then the doctor came to examine the patient. And the wife is watching over what is happening. Then as the doctor started to touch the part of the foot, so he's saying, okay, is it hurting here? No. Is it hurting there? No. It's hurting here. So the husband had already described to the wife where it was hurting him. So the doctor asked the husband, is it hurting here? And the wife says, ouch. So she's so, the wife is okay actually, but the wife is so identified with the husband, you know, so that his pain is her pain now. There is no difference. There is no separation. So she was the one who says ouch, because he had told her, you know, this is where it's hurting me and I don't think I'll be able to walk further, etc., etc. So this oneness that we experience generally for us is related to the conditions that we have. So that's why everybody wants to go on a holiday, because the regular stresses and strains are not there. No, no, let us spend time together, because we are trying to create conditions so that we are not stressed by other things. So when it comes to me and my relationship with Bhagwan, what is the connection? Because for the Arti, Artharthi and Jignyasu, Bhagwan says, I am remote. Na pranashyati. I am very remote for them. I am far away. But for the Jnani, Asmin, Tat Shabda, that Tasmin is now Asmin. It's me. It's this. So what is the separation then? So when we look at the body and the mind, because of the sense of touch we have, we feel that there is a boundary. This is me, where my nose ends, or as the case may be, where my belly ends, that's where I am, and this is the rest of the world. Is this separation real? Because I find that the body, all the processes of the body, they are operating according to certain laws. So the entire medical profession is trying to understand these laws. They're not trying to make the laws work. They are not trying to make digestion work. They understand the process of digestion, and anything that hinders with it is what they look into. But what is understood is the process. And like that, every other discipline of knowledge is understanding processes, is understanding laws, is understanding principles. And each and every law is intelligent. There is nothing random, there is nothing haphazard, there is nothing that cannot be explained. Explained in the sense that there are a lot of things we have not yet discovered. But everything has a deep intelligence to it. And we know that anything that is inert is not intelligent. The recorder will not record itself. It needs a conscious being to press the button record. So all the laws, all the principles, deeply intelligent, and that intelligence rests in a conscious being. So all the people who say, oh no, no, forces of nature, I don't know this Bhagavan and all this, I'm not a religious person, I'm very pragmatic. So forces of nature, that's it. Hello, but forces of nature They are deeply intelligent and there is a conscious being that is in the manifestation of these laws. I don't want to acknowledge that. Okay, that's up to you. So as I am here, this body, this mind is pervaded by the intelligence of all these laws. Is it some local fellow who has made these laws? No. So the laws are applicable to all of us. The principles, the way in which things function, the way they do. Mind, the way it functions, with all the confusion, with all the knowledge, with all the reasoning, with all the emoting, everything. There's a certain psychological order by which it operates. That I accept certain things, that I accept, I cannot accept, all that also pervaded by a particular order, by certain principles. That whole set of principles is nothing else but Bhagwan. So now, I thought I was calling all the shots, but what is it that is mine now? Is my mind really mine? Is my body really my body? We don't know. Because it's all pervaded. No, but maybe it's, you know, you've inherited from your parents. But what have you inherited? Genes? So Bhagwan says that I am the bijam. I am the bijam for all your karma also. Gita. So that the law of karma, that I happen to be born in this family at this time, etc., etc., the whole law of karma and karma phala, all of that I am. So now I am pervaded by Bhagwan in terms of the manifestation. There is nothing I can claim to be mine. Because everything is subject to the laws, everything is subject to principles. So then how to have this emotion of parama prema? Okay, laws, principles, chalo, okay, I get it. But how to have this parama prema rupa, bhakti? So here, it's very important for us to understand, this is teaching. This is not advice. Okay, we have a very unique ability to convert all teaching of what is to I should have this. I should look at things as is. No, that's not what the Shastra is saying. Shastra just presents a reality. If you're interested, you see. If you're not, doesn't matter. It's okay. You know, you are Atma anyway. So how does it matter? So that's what even Bhagwan is saying. That the arti artharti jignyasu. He says, you know, the jnani is dear to me. But they are also atma. There's only one. But from the standpoint of the different upadhis, the different bodies, we are saying, they don't know that. They don't know that. The jnani knows. So then if I'm saying that all that I love is really for the sake of myself, it sounds terribly selfish, you know. So this is self-love. So, but that's not what is being spoken of. It is that at the manifestation level, when I'm looking at the mind and body, I am pervaded by Bhagwan. But what is my swarupa? What is my nature? See, because mind and body processes, body functions, sometimes it's dysfunctional also. All that is manifestation. What is the swarupa of the jnani? What is the swarupa of Ishvara? And that swarupa as in what is its intrinsic nature? That which is pointed out, that which cannot be really described, that which might be its defining feature. What is that? And here Narada says, it is Ananda. So, the Ananda that manifests is experienced as prema. That limitlessness, when it manifests, there is nothing to limit you. There is no condition to limit you. There is no situation that limits you. Even my ragadveshas don't limit me, don't condition me. Then therefore, it's all available. Ananta, Ananda is not inhibited. And that I am. So the jnani does not have a sense of separation from Bhagavan. There is, because, and you know, the beautiful thing is that it connects to our experience, because we know we have experienced oneness with a person. And that, so we know what that means, and that oneness comes from us. And that's why Yajnavalkya says that may you know about this Atma, because it's you. So Atma Vare Shrotavyaha, may you listen to the Shastra that reveals that you are the source of this limitlessness. We are not talking about experiential Ananda. That's okay. That anyway manifests. But our experiential Ananda is subject to conditions. Whereas here he's saying, no, you listen to this. Contemplate on this. And manage the raga dveshas with karma yoga buddhi. Because then, when I'm managing my raga dvesha, I'm not really reacting as a person. Otherwise, I'm always reacting to something or the other. In my reaction, reality is denied. I can't stand this. What's the reality? No, I can't stand it. Okay, that's my response, or that's my reaction to it. Oh, I love this. That's my reaction to this. So I'm choosing to look at one or two aspects of something when there's a lot to look at. And when I am saying that, when Narada is saying that Satu Asmin, in this, in yourself, not in Tat Shabda, not in something that is remote, in yourself, Parama Prema Rupa Iti Bhaktihi, that in that understanding of oneness, that understanding that you and Bhagwan are not separate, there was never a separation. It only took me a certain time to discover the separation, the connection. It starts with seeking a connection, deepening the connection, and then actually finding there was really no separation at all. You know, it was all fun and play, you know, until it lasted. There was never a separation. That to discover that there was never a separation, that Atma is the source of Ananda, and therefore, when directed towards Bhagwan, how else will it be? Bhagwan is me, that's it, nothing more than that. So then, when Ananda expresses itself, it expresses itself as Parama Prema Rupaha. So that absolute love that one has for oneself, because oneself is Bhagwan, Atma. There is no separation. There was never a separation. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.